Good morning. Okay, so we have counsel for appellant and counsel for respondent here on our second case, and when the marshal is ready, we can call the next case.
Now calling A230860 in the matter of the appeal by Serenity Adult Day Center of the order of license revocation, license number 1094723, rule 223.
Okay. It's Thursday, February 29th, leap day, 2024. This is the second of our cases scheduled for oral argument. As you might recall, the arguments are recorded by the court and available within 24 hours on the branch website. So please introduce yourself at the beginning of your argument clearly and identify the party that you represent. In addition, the podium has a timer on it. Will have 15 minutes for your initial argument, and appellant's counsel will have an additional 5 minutes. So feel free to adjust the podium as needed when you start. As of right now, we have 15 minutes on the clock for appellant's counsel, and you can begin when you are ready.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Aaron Roy, and I represent the appellant, Serenity Adult Day Center, in this case. Serenity Adult Day Center had their license revoked, and it is their position that the decision to revoke that license was both arbitrary and capricious. When deciding whether the decision is arbitrary and capricious, this court can consider whether the agency's decision entirely failed to consider an important aspect of the problem. That's Citizens Advocacy Responsibility Development versus Kandy Ohi County Board of Commissioners. Here, the court did not consider the timelines of the case nor the language barrier as addressed in our brief. First, regarding the timelines, the first licensing review occurred in September of 2020. Serenity Adult Day Center was then allowed to operate for 10 months without even an indication that there was these violations that occurred, without an exit interview, without any indication that they needed to change their ways of doing business. They then settled into these ways of doing their business. This was a new business that only had their license for about a year. This was during COVID. They had adapted to the times. And then 10 months later, they get a conditional license order saying that they have 15 violations, that they need to essentially a ground up rework of their entire program. Then they were given 15, 20, and 30 days to make substantial changes. This timeline was not properly considered by the ALJ in making the decision to uphold the revocation, being that the amount of time given to them to do this entire overhaul for what we consider to be not serious violations, I'll get to that in my nature, severity, and chronicity arguments as well, but that we don't believe that argument was properly considered by the ALJ when making the revocation.
Counsel, can I ask, will you frame it that they were allowed to operate the way they did for 10 months? Wouldn't it be true that when you're seeking the license in the first place, I assume you're given all kinds of material with all kinds of rules and the requirements, and typically there's an agreement that I will follow all these rules and requirements, et cetera, before the first license is issued. And I assume that happened here. So when you say they're allowed to do it, I assume there's a certain assumption by an owner that when you agree that I'm going to follow all these many rules and regulations to follow them, or if you have questions, then to inquire it from the get-go. Now, what does this phrase mean, and what's this notification requirement? Wouldn't that be a better framing of when someone starts a business and gets a license?
It is, and Serenity Adult Day Center actually had other licenses for similar businesses, but this was their first adult day center, and so they were familiar with how this worked, and they thought they were operating in such a way, because they did sign that agreement when they first got their license. They did think that they were operating under these standards. However, when they were told that, when they first were reviewed, they were never even told that they were not. And then when they were eventually told, they didn't get the resources necessary, even when they reached out to the licensor, even when they hired a consultant who reached out to that licensor who didn't respond to them. And so the idea behind the timeline argument is that the that while Serenity does concede that there were violations, that's not in dispute here, that there were some violations there, that the decisions and the timelines that the agency made were so arbitrary, were so not in line with the requirements given to them, that they can just allow them to operate even though they know these violations existed for 10 months, and then suddenly one day they decide, hey, you have 15 days, 20 days, 30 days to change everything from the bottom up. That is not the role of the agency. The role of the agency is to enforce these rules, but also to provide this guidance to them and not to come up with these arbitrary timelines, and especially not to issue these revocations as soon as they start getting pushback. And I'll get into that down the road as well.
So by the time there's a hearing before the ALJ, was their presentation of evidence complying now with all these rules? And I realize that may only go to the disposition, but I assume it would be something looked at favorable by the commissioner, if indeed by that day, at least now we've complied with all these, and here's our evidence of it.
Correct. And Serenity was not in full compliance by the time of the hearing. And that's not the point of contention here, is that they do acknowledge that they were not in full compliance, and therefore the commissioner had authority to institute some form of a penalty. But whether that decision was an abuse of discretion by the court at that point then is part of their argument as well.
But maybe that's what I'm getting at. Doesn't that weigh in favor of that's not an abuse, if even as of the day, because that you mentioned the shorter timeline between the two orders, the initial orders from the commissioner, the conditional, and then the revocation, but then you have a lot of lag time. I can remember a number of months where it's evidently clear, okay, I need to get these things done. So wouldn't that, by not doing that, suggest there's no arbitrary and capricious, because it just wasn't done even with that longer period of time?
Well, when we're talking about which penalty is instituted, whether that be a suspension, a conditional license, a full revocation, the court is tasked with looking at the nature, severity, and chronicity of the violations here. And while there were numerous violations, we contend not only that the agency did not provide the proper support it should have and allowed them to operate when it may not have been able to, but also that they did make strides. They did hire this consultant. The consultant did reach out to the board, provide documentation of some of these, and just didn't get a response from the licensor. In fact, the day after they reached out the second time, that's when the revocation was issued, almost what appears to be a punitive way. But regarding the abuse of discretion argument, is that these violations were not of such severity or chronicity that it would warrant a revocation, in the sense of they were allowed to continue operating for this entire time. These violations were mostly record-keeping paperwork. They're not allegations that there's maltreatment happening. There's not allegations that the clients are living in squalor or anything like that. It is more about these paperwork violations that they said, they need to be fixed, but we're going to continue to let you operate. We're going to let you have a conditional license. And so the abuse of discretion comes not in saying that, yes, these were not all cured, that there's still not room for improvement, but that a revocation suddenly coming after all of this time and all of the work done by Serenity was an abuse of discretion. It took things way too far without properly considering the other options available to them.
I'd like to follow up on that, because so adding dates to these timelines here. So July of 2021 is when there was the 15 days, 30 days, that deal, right?
Yes.
And then the hearing before the ALJ, or the hearing on the license revocation, took place August of 2022. Is that correct?
That is.
Okay, so if we walk, and then at the time of the hearing, there was still violations that existed.
Correct.
Okay, so we have, there was a year. So it's so 15, 30, 60 days to, or 15, 20, 30 days to complete these things. But then there was a year that went on between when that 30 days passed until the hearing, with still violations existing.
That is, and it's our contention that the violations were not of such nature, severity, chronicity that could justify a revocation. Certainly, perhaps a suspension until the full compliance is made, maybe a more severe conditional license, but we the argument is that a revocation took things in such an extreme route that did not seem to align with the agency's prior actions.
Okay, so then the timelines of, even though they might be tight, of the 15, 20, 30 days, that's sort of irrelevant to our analysis.
I wouldn't say it's irrelevant. I would say it goes to the agency's lack of actual follow-through in this case, and saying that that they're going to allow them to operate, they're going to put on these tight timelines, but they're not going to follow up with them. They seem to be set up to fail, and then when they do try and reach out and say, hey, we hired this consultant, they're making these changes, we're providing documentation, what else do you need? Then the revocation comes. The agency doesn't seem to be actually applying to their own standards of saying, hey, we find all these violations, we're not going to address it with you for 10 months. This agency's going, it's more their unchecked power at this point of just being able to issue these revocations on a whim whenever they get pushback from a licensed party.
I want to switch to that plain language piece that you've raised in your brief. The plain language goes to the corrective actions the agency says need to be made. Is that right?
That is.
Okay. So, and then your client made corrective actions and hired a consultant and was working towards making some changes. So my question is, it doesn't seem like they had any confusion about the plain language of that document if they were making the changes that the agency required.
Well, the record reflects that there was still confusion, even though they were making some changes. Mr. Albert, the license holder who testified at the hearing, had indicated that he had his son draft the letter to the clients that had to indicate their conditional license status because his son was better at writing English. He had his son even review the letter for some of the conditions that they had to follow, and even he was confused, even though he was the one that spoke English better. At the hearing, it was acknowledged by the licensor that English was Mr. Albert's second language. And so the record does reflect that there was confusion, that they did call in their son to help try and decipher this order, and he was still confused by it. So I do think that that argument was made at the hearing.
Is there anything in the record that shows your client, your client's son, or the consultant reached out to the agency and said, we're confused about what exactly you're looking for?
So the license holder did testify that they had reached out and that they weren't getting responses from the licensor, but also the record reflects that the consultant had reached out twice and didn't get responses. The first time asking for what the licensor was looking for from her, because it sounds like there was some form of confusion, and the second time providing documentation and I think asking some further questions, and they didn't get a response either time. And to the non-plain language of the letter, I would also note that Mr. Albert's wife also testified that about the having the son write the letter to the clients regarding the conditional license status, and that she also believed that there was a language barrier as well. And so that was corroborated by his wife. And so it's easy to take the narrow view here and just focus on the violations, and that's what we believe that the ALJ did, just take a look at these violations. But what they did not do is they didn't take a look at the entire picture. They completely disregarded these timelines. They completely disregarded the agency's counterintuitive actions and tacit ratification of the actions taken by Serenity.
And they didn't. Can you explain again how that factually in the record, the tacit, is that simply issuing the initial license or subsequent on-site reviews before the one that led to the conditional license?
The initial review that occurred in 2020, and then they weren't afforded the what they call an exit interview, which is customary, where they say, hey, here are the things that you need to improve on, here's what I noticed, things like that. That was never afforded to them, and then 10 months later was the first time that they heard about all of these alleged violations. And so that's what I refer to when I say the tacit ratification of the way they're doing business. If they weren't doing business properly, they need to be let known right away, whether that's just a conversation, whether that's a conditional license order, whether that's something, you know, even more formal than that. That never occurred here. The agency just said, keep going about your business, and then when we get to it, we get to it. We'll issue a conditional license order.
So on that initial interview, are you saying that all the practices of the business, including what led to, I think ultimately was the 15 violations, was presented to the licensor and said that all looks fine? Or
the licensor came multiple days and got documentation. They observed the business practices here. And then on the end of the last day, they left. They didn't have a sit-down meeting to do that, what we call an exit interview, to talk about what they observed and what they changed. They conducted their review so they could go back, make a report, and then 10 months later, when it got to someone's desk, issue a conditional license revocation, or conditional license at that point. And so that's what I refer to as the tacit ratification by the agency suddenly deciding that now action needs to be taken, even though no indication had been made to Serenity that they need to make
given
any changes.
That, was there any explanation, and is it that in the record, of why such a short timeline to correct these problems, the 15 and 30 days, these issues?
There was no indication of why that timeline was so tight after those 10 months, and that's what we believe that ALJ completely disregarded, and that's what we believe is an arbitrary and capricious decision, because that was not even considered by the court.
Counsel, is it required for there to be an exit interview and for there to be some kind of preliminary preview of what findings that the agency might make?
It's not required under statute. However, the requirements of these day centers to the requirements of them that came 10 months later was the part that they took issue with is, even if they weren't afforded an exit interview, that conditional license should have come much sooner if they're going to require change in 15, 20, 30 days. That should have happened the next day. That should happen the next week, rather than 10 months later saying, hey, by the time it's been 11 months since your licensing review, now changes need to come. So that was the issue that was taken with.
Okay, thank you.
It appears my time has expired.
It is.
All right.
So thank you, and you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. I will turn to counsel for respondent now. There are 15 minutes on the clock. Feel free to adjust the podium as needed and begin when you are ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Morgan Alexander. I'm an Assistant Attorney General here today representing respondent, the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Human Services. This court should affirm the Commissioner's order affirming the November 19th, 2021 order for revocation for two reasons. First, there is substantial evidence in the record demonstrating that at the time of the October 2021 licensing inspection, the relator was in violation of numerous statutes and had failed to comply with any of the three terms in the conditional license, and none of that is in dispute. Second, the record demonstrates that upon considering the nature, severity, and chronicity of the violations, and after evaluating the circumstances concerning how these violations impacted the well-being of the vulnerable adults being served by the program, the commissioner acted reasonably in determining that revoking relator's license was the appropriate sanction. Before getting into the merits of this case, I would like to clarify for the court exactly what is on appeal. We are here today reviewing that order for revocation. We are not here today reviewing the issuance of the conditional license. The conditional license was a separate legal proceeding. It was issued on July 12th, 2021. Relator had the opportunity to request reconsideration and appeal to the Office of Administrative Hearings for a contested case hearing. Relator did not do so. And not doing so, they consented to the timelines included in the conditional license. They consented to the violations listed in the conditional license. There have been arguments made today and in the briefs relating to whether an exit interview was given at the time of that September 2020 inspection, whether the language of the conditional license was plain, whether that timeline was appropriate, and the delay between that September 2020 review and the issuance of the conditional license. Those are all issues related to that conditional license. They are not appropriately on appeal before this court today.
Ms. Alexander, though, wouldn't all of that, really this case is all about the remedy or the end disposition, and so Would you agree, at least, and at least that's the arguments, I saw that in the brief, and he confirmed that for appellant today, that issues of chronicity and severity do kind of go to the first order, the short timeline, the 10 months, and as he argued today, a lack of an exit interview, because it all really kind of happens rather rapidly. So in that sense, it becomes relevant, not the order per se, but the information in the order.
I believe that the information in the order is relevant in that the order of revocation was based in part on their ability to comply with the terms in the conditional license. But the basis for that issuance, that would have been appropriately addressed at an appeal of the conditional license. But when they did not appeal, they consented. They consented to the process. They consented to the timelines. They agreed that conditional license was properly issued, and they agreed to abide by the terms that were listed within the conditional license. They failed to do so. And because they failed to do so, that order of revocation was properly issued.
Okay. Would you agree, with the record support, that he's framed the tacit, the timeline being that when he applies for the license, that the business plan and how it's going to operate, which I assume, without knowing, that includes perhaps some of the details of the violations. And so that's on day one. And then he's given a license and operates with that business plan for 10 months. Then there's the inspection and violations and 30 days or 15 days. It does strike me, at least a sympathetic argument, that why is there such a rush now when we got the license 10 months ago? And that maybe again ties to then why after 30 days a revocation versus, look, we're serious about this, we need to see some movement. And then, you know, that's sort of a being a government regulator and wanting to see the business succeed, it seems like more of an incremental, whereas this was, bam, it was shut.
Sure. So first, as you noted, Your Honor, when Relator applied for the license, they attested that they understood the regulations that applied to them and that they would follow the law in providing these services. And that comes from Minnesota Statute 245A.04, Subdivision 6A5. It is true that there was this 10-month delay between the September review and the issuance of the conditional license. There's nothing in the record to explain that delay, and that delay is not ideal. But resource constraints don't reduce a license holder's obligation to comply with the law. These are uncontested, serious violations, and while the conditional license did put Relator on formal notice about these specific violations, they had an ongoing obligation to comply with the regulations that dictate how adult daycare facilities are to be run. So they had these 10 months where they weren't given a specific notice of what was wrong, but they did know that they had to be in compliance with the law. They were not in compliance with the law. And while the conditional license terms had these up to 30-day marks for when things should be complete, 3 months, in fact, passed between the time that the conditional license was issued and that unannounced licensing inspection occurred. The licensor went to the facility, and she saw that there had been no meaningful changes that had taken place. So she reviewed the same documentation that was reviewed in September 2020. There was no change in the documents. She explicitly testified that there was only one new document, and that was a notice of a participant death. She did note that there were some improvements to the facility, and there had been some things cleaned up, but they were not corrected to the level of meeting the statutory standards. So taken all together, they were always on notice that they had to be in compliance with the law. Not only did they have those 10 months between the initial inspection and the conditional license, they had 3 full months between the issuance and the second inspection, and nothing was done. As to the specific terms and sort of the timelines related to those terms, the conditional license asked that Relator notify parties identified in the license about their conditional status. It asked that they make a plan detailing how they would get into compliance, and it asked that they audit their records. The licensor testified before the administrative law judge to the purpose of these terms. The first is to allow participants the opportunity to have informed choice about where they are receiving their services. Both the second and third are to give the licensee Relator a chance to show that they know they are out of compliance and that they are working to get into compliance, and it's to give DHS reassurance that corrections will be made and individuals remain safe. Relator sort of presents this argument that there was a strict 10-day deadline, you've done it all or you haven't, and it's over. But that's not true. As the record shows, 3 months passed. There were opportunities to reach out to DHS. Relator informed at that unannounced inspection that they had contracted with someone 4 days prior. I believe it was October 14th to October 19th. Contracting with that consultant was not a term required in the conditional license. That is an action Relator took upon themselves to look for someone. And while it did take them 3 months to find this person, nothing was stopping them from doing things like making sure their training was up to date, making sure participant records were up to date. Relator sort of presents these as merely paperwork violations. But they are much more serious than that. These are the Department of Human Services' way of knowing, are we meeting the minimum standards required in the law to protect the rights, the safety, and the well-being of vulnerable populations? Do we have medication plans? Do we have doctor's information? Do we have evidence that there has been training on reporting of maltreatment? All these sorts of things are very important, and they ensure that these vulnerable adults are receiving the standard of care that the state of Minnesota requires by law.
Realtor argues here today that they did reach out to the agency several times for clarification and received no response. So what are we to make of that?
So Relator testified before the ALJ that they had reached out. The licensor testified before the ALJ that there was no record that there had been an attempt to reach out. The ALJ found the licensor's testimony to be more credible. And the commissioner deferred to the ALJ's weighing of that credibility. So based on that, based on the weighing of credibility, it was found that they did not reach out.
And because that's a credibility determination, that's not something that we're going to dig into.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
I will speak briefly, too, on the plain language and sort of the language barrier argument. First, as to whether the conditional license was in plain language, again, that does speak to that is something that would have been properly brought up in an appeal of the conditional license. But as was noted, they were seeking out a consultant. They clearly knew that there were changes that needed to be made, and they just were not following those changes as was required. As we've already discussed, they attested that they understood what was required of them and they would follow the law. At any time, they could have reached out to DHS and requested translation services. They did not do so. The licensor testified that while she knew that English was their second language, it's not appropriate to assume that having English as a second language means a lack of understanding. And the licensor testified that Mr. Albert did understand her and they were able to have a conversation. So there is not evidence in the record that there were these language difficulties at the time that the licensing inspection had occurred. We've discussed that there's substantial evidence in the record that there were these violations and that these terms had not been met. I would specifically direct the court to transcript volume 1, pages 36 to 89 for a detailed explanation of each violation, why they matter, and why there was no evidence presented to show that there were changes made with respect to them. The initial 19 violations in the conditional license, 15 were repeated at the time of the on-site inspection. I'd like to just briefly address why the revocation sanction was appropriate. Under the statute, the commissioner is required to consider the nature, severity, and chronicity of these violations, and she's required to conduct an evaluation of the program, considering multiple things, including how these violations impacted the well-being of the participants. The commissioner found, and it was testified to at the hearing, that the relator was operating on a conditional license when it received 15 licensing violations. Many of these affected the health and safety of the participants served. That speaks to the nature of these violations. There were violations related to the health and safety of vulnerable adults served. The relator failed to provide staff with orientation on mandated reporters. Their maltreatment policies and procedures did not meet legal requirements. They didn't ensure menus for meals met legal requirements. There were chemicals accessible to participants. The premises were not free of debris, litter, peeling paint. This speaks to the overall severity of the violations. The commissioner also found that while operating on a conditional license, the appellant had these 15 violations, and history demonstrates a systemic problem in the operation of Relators Program that put the well-being of vulnerable adults served by the program at risk. That speaks to the chronicity of the violations. As to the overall evaluation, the commissioner found that revocation was appropriate, considering the well-being of the vulnerable adults served by this program. There were information lacking about the qualifications of staff, and this failure to follow standards, such as those speaking to medication administration and treatment and other violations listed in the order, show that the participants' safety, well-being, and rights were put at risk by these violations. For this reason, Relator was unable to meet even the minimum standards under the statute, and the commissioner appropriately determined that those being served by the program who deserve a safe and clean environment and appropriate programming, having their well-being taken seriously, they weren't receiving that which they deserve under the statute. Just to conclude in my remaining time, Your Honor, all the facts taken together establish that revocation was an appropriate sanction, considering the multiple repeated violations of the laws designed to protect the health, safety, and well-being and the welfare of vulnerable people served. Agency decisions enjoy presumption of correctness, and this court defers to the agency when their decisions are reasonable and based on substantial evidence in the record. Here, the record is replete with evidence supporting the revocation order, and the law is in the commissioner's favor. Therefore, if there are no further questions, I respectfully ask that you affirm the commissioner's order in this matter.
Okay, thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
And we'll turn back to counsel for appellant for 5 minutes of rebuttal. We'll reset the clock, and looks like we're ready to start whenever you are.
Thank you. May it please the court, there's a few pieces that I'd like to address from the respondent's arguments. First, regarding that the conditional license was not relevant to the proceedings here, as there was a review of the revocation order. I think Your Honor got it completely correct when that was entirely relevant to the revocation order, and it shows that them allowing them that conditional license order 10 months after these violations were found indicated that these were not of such severity, these violations were not of such severity that they needed anything more than a conditional license. And so I think it's entirely relevant to this case and to the decision being made to show that it was an abuse of discretion to jump all the way from a conditional license to a revocation when there are several other steps that could have been taken by the agency, several other decisions could have been made by that ALJ.
I think Respondents' Counsel makes a persuasive argument that there was a process to appeal that conditional license. And because that process wasn't utilized, your clients have essentially agreed back then to the terms that existed in that license. So how do you respond to that?
I think that ties into the plain language argument in the sense of when we're talking, and it was testified to, that English is a second language, that especially when it comes to reading and writing, that part gets harder for my client. And so the licensor stated that she had a conversation with Mr. Albert and they could converse. Again, that's contradicted. That part's not contradicted, but what's laid out in the record is that when it came to reading and writing, that's when it became more of a challenge in English. And so these conditional licenses that come, they're complex legal documents. Even Mr. Albert's son, who was able to read and write better than him, had a hard time understanding it. There are tight timelines in order to appeal those. And so if that document wasn't in plain language and they missed their appeal window, then that translates over to the revocation. That argument follows suit both from the conditional license to the revocation order.
Counsel, how do you respond to information provided by opposing counsel that your client could have had an interpreter, that they were available, that all he had to do was reach out to the agency and request that, but did not?
And so I think that goes to the same argument of that when they were conversing with the licensor, when they were able to get in contact with them, when the licensor did visit, they were having these conversations. But when we're talking about not being afforded that exit interview and then just coming with a complex legal document, that's where that kind of disconnect came.
But do you agree that interpreter services were available and your client did not ask for any?
I do. And so those are the two main points that I wanted to address on rebuttal here, and so I'd be happy to answer any remaining questions that the court may have. But if not, I would just ask that the court reverse the decision and understand that this was a drastic step taken by the agency as well as the ALJ, and that a revocation here was not the proper decision to be made based on the nature, severity, and chronicity of the violations, as well as the counterintuitive actions of the agency. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you to both counsel for your argument here today and for the briefs that were submitted. The matter is considered submitted, and we will issue an opinion in it within the statutory time frame. Thank you.